This is the audio recording for Wayne Hill for the Historical Society. Hey, Wayne, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you, Cam?
Doing just fine. Are you okay with me recording this?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with you recording.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get started. So go ahead and give me your full name.
All right. I'm Frederick Wayne Hill.
Okay. And go ahead and give me your wife's name.
Carolyn Roberts Hill.
And what about your children?
Well, I got Jody Reeves, David Hill, and Paula Trussman.
Okay. And I won't make you give all your grandkids and great-grandkids names, but if you would like to share with me how many grandkids and how many great-grandchildren you have.
Well, some of them are stout, but we treat them all the same. I've got 9 grandchildren. I have 12 great-grandchildren and 2 more on the way.
Okay.
So by summer, I'll have 14 great-grandchildren.
Okay. You are blessed.
I'm blessed. Got them everywhere.
All right. So, were you born in Sugar Hill?
Yes, I was actually born on Hannah Street. Matter of fact, somebody's bought the house and remodeling it now. So, I was born right behind where the daycare center is there.
Okay. All right. How long did you live there?
Kim, I really don't know. I was born there. I know we moved around the corner to where the old, right below where Mr. Robinson lived. We lived in the house there until after World War II, and Mother had bought the lot where the mission station is now, or the mission shack is. And after Daddy got out of the service, they built that house. And we moved into that house when I was probably 6 years old. I just remember a little. We moved in a horse and wagon from one side of the block to the other.
Okay. Okay. 6 years old, do you have any memories about that?
Well, that's where we were at whenever I had diphtheria. They thought I was going to die. I remember the doctor coming every day and giving me shots. And I remember having a birthday, and they couldn't come into the room, so they brought a cake around to the window to let me sit. That's about the memory I have of it.
Okay. Okay. All right. And what were your parents' name?
Francis Tribble was mother, and John or Robert W. Hill was daddy. He always went by John for some reason or other, but that's who they were.
Okay. And what did they do?
Well, mother was a beautician. You know, she ran a beauty shop for many, many years, and to start with, I remember my dad working in Gainesville up at the saddle shop in Gainesville. And then he went to work at General Motors, worked there a long time, and always wanted to get in business for himself. He bought a concrete block business from somebody in Buford, and it would never make a good block, so he lost a bunch of money there. And then later, he went into the kitchen cabinet business. Actually worked for Mr. Ed Camp, who was the mayor. He worked for him for several years and then decided to go in business for himself. So that's where it started, the Hill Cabinet. And after I got out of high school, I went to work with Eddie.
Okay. All right. You mentioned your mother's beauty shop. Was her beauty shop in Sugar Hill?
Well, she actually worked up at Mr. Jim Messier's. He had a barbershop. Most people probably don't remember Mr. Messier, but he'd lost both legs and he cut her. And mother worked with him in one side of his building there and ran a beauty shop until later she decided, daddy added on to the house and decided to come down to Hannah Street, and that's where she ran her beauty shop for many years until they retired. Right where the admissions place is. One end of that house was a beauty shop.
Okay. And for your dad, when he went into business for himself, do you know what year that was?
Probably was 1958, I'm guessing. It was right in there, about 1957, 58. And he went into business there, and him and Doug McDaniel ran it for a while. They were called Hill McDaniel. And then they weren't doing real good, and Doug decided to get out of the business, and so I bought his part out. And that's where Hill & Son started, which later became just Hill Cabinet Company after I incorporated it. It spread from probably 1957, 58, until our business burned in, 97, I guess.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to jump back in time a little bit. So you were born in Sugar Hill. What are some of your earliest memories of Sugar Hill?
Well, I remember everything was dirt roads. You know, they weren't much going on. We had Rocky's store, and Mr. Brewlove and later Mr. Knight ran the store, and then we had Lamar Drizzle's garage there, our service station, right where the old building is. It sits in the point there at Sugar Hill. And, you know, it was kind of a hangout for us teenage boys. Mr. Upfrey had built a skating rink, and then there's a little bowling alley out there that Louis Grizzle ran. I think Mr. Bailey, Shelly Bailey's daddy, actually built it, and then later Louis ran it. But I used to fix skates, and I used to set pins at the bowling alley. And of course, I had Sugar Hill Drive-In. Little eating place there, Miss B-Rail ran. So we had a little bit of stuff, but there wasn't nothing exciting about any of it, I don't guess. And it was a good place to grow up. There wasn't a lot of crime or anything. Wasn't any dope or anything like that. It was maybe a little white liquor around, but, you know, it was just a different world. So I remember growing up in Sugar Hill. It was a great place to be. I remember years ago, the goat man used to come through Sugar Hill and spend a day or two. A lot of people wouldn't know what the goat man is, but he had a bunch of goats and traveled all over, I reckon, the southeast. And he'd come and spend a day or two. And then we used to have a little circus that was over by Petrol Lane. They'd come over and had an elephant and some rides. I remember that. So it's just quite different. Remember going to Buford, to the theater. You know, we had Allen Theater. We'd actually walk Sugar Hill to Buford to go to the theater. And so it was just a great place to grow up. It was, you knew everybody. Of course, with the mother running a beauty shop, if I got in trouble, she knew it before I got home. So everybody knew me. So anyway, I grew up, I guess, in the beauty shop, but it was a good place to be.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the schools, when you went to school and any memories that you have from the school.
Well, we went to, we had a school where all the apartments are sitting now. That was the first school I went to. There was a high school that actually sat in the corner down kind of across from Mr. Robinson's house that Mr. Humphrey had built. And then the old elementary school sat between there and where the church was. And that's where I started first grade. We went in that old white building. Later in life, after I guess we were in high school, they actually moved the old school building across it's not Level Creek, whatever that is. It comes in behind the church where the church used to be. They moved that building over there, and we went split sessions with the high school while they were moving it one year. And then later, the lunchroom was over there, and the high school was right there by Level Creek. And if we ate in the lunchroom, we had to walk all the way over there to eat lunch. So nobody complained. Right in the point out there, we had the shop. We had what they call agriculture and the shop. And we'd go out there, and of course we had the ball field where part of those apartments are. It wasn't big enough to play regular ball on, but we as kids always played there, and that's where the high school practiced. Now, they played their games up in Buford at the old Boney Allen field, but they actually practiced there. And if you had a good hitter, you had to get down across Level Creek Road because the ball would go in the woods. So nobody complained, it seems like. It seems like that, you know, we accepted what we had. We were all poor, but nobody knew it because everybody was. And school was, you know, I can name about all of my school teachers. I tell people. That's one place that most people can always remember is they can name all their school teachers. They can't name a lot of other things, but school teachers have a real impact on life, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Did you have a favorite teacher?
No, I had all of them as favorite, I guess. I didn't, you know, we had Miss Dimples, Miss Hayes, Miss Corbett, Miss Bice, two Miss Bices, and that was all in elementary school, Miss Greer. And, you know, they were all just good folks. They'd give you a spanking if you got in trouble, but they'd treat you right, too. So it was really a great place. Now, we had the shoe shop was set where all the development is now, where City Hall is. And we'd play ball up on top of the hill, kickball, I guess, of some kind. Sometimes the ball would go all the way down there, and we'd have to go get it. But it was just a different world. I remember during August Revival, Mr. Colonel Higgins actually ran the shop. He worked for somebody out of New York, I think, when they had Georgia Boot, Georgia Shoe, whatever it was. And when they had Revival, he'd let the employees take their lunch break and come over to the church during church time, and then they'd go back to work. So it's just a different world. This world today is nothing like what we grew up with, and I think we're missing something with some of that.
Right. So did you have a favorite subject in school?
Well, I always liked math. You know, I was pretty good at math and with numbers, so I was always pretty good with that. That probably was my favorite.
Okay.
I love history. You know, I didn't have as much history as I did math, but I always liked history, too, to know the history of everything. It's kind of like one time I was on a trip with the folks from Georgia Power. When I was in the cabinet business, I used to win some trips when I'd sell appliances, and Georgia Power sold appliances, and I remember being on a trip. And a man told me he was on the crew that run power to Sugar Hill in about 1935. He said he was part of that crew. He said, I was a young man, but we ran power from Buford to Sugar Hill, and that's the first time they had power in Sugar Hill. So I took that to be the truth, so I reckon it was.
Oh, that's neat. Okay. During your time in school, what were some of the, and it can be your elementary or your high school years, some of the things that y'all did for fun, games, get together, other than the skating rink or the bowling alley?
Well, there wasn't a lot of other things, Kim.
Uh-huh.
When we were at Sugar Hill, you know, we played ball, we played basketball and baseball. We went to Sugar Hill through the 10th grade. And then they consolidated Swanee and Sugar Hill, and that's when we went to North Gwinnett. And the year I graduated from North Gwinnett, which was 2 years in there, they started a football team at at North Gwinnett with the 8th grade. And we at that time, we had the 8th grade at North Gwinnett. It was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And then they began to do the middle schools later. But I remember they started football. Well, but the guys, you know, we'd go fishing, we'd go hunting, somewhere along in there in about 1995, 96, I guess, Lanier filled up. And we'd go fishing and hunting, and it wasn't anything back then to have a gun rack in your car or truck. And you'd drive it to school, nobody said anything. And we were never worried about somebody shooting somebody. We was headed hunting right for school or something. So that's kind of what we did.
Yeah.
Wasn't a lot to do.
Right. What was your first job?
My first job was setting pins at the bowling alley.
Okay.
I actually went to work there, and I think we got a nickel a line. We'd set them up like 10, 11 times for a nickel. And then when we really made a little money, it was on Saturday night. A bunch of the guys had wanted to bowl late. We'd tell them we was going home, and they'd start paying us a lot more, so we'd make a little more there. So anyway, that's the first paying job I had, and then I went to work at Big Apple Supermarket. Mother and Daddy gave me a horse that I kept down at Puff Tribbles, my granddaddy, and I had to go to work to feed her, and so I would go on Saturday morning to catch a Greyhound bus. I was probably 12, 13, I don't know, somewhere along in there, I'd catch a bus. Daddy'd carry me over on Highway 23, flag down a Greyhound bus. I'd ride the bus down to Shamley, and from there I could see my Uncle Ed's house or apartment up there. I'd get off the bus and walk up there. And I would work all day on Saturday and make tips. I think I made about $6 or $7. And then at night, I'd come back to his house, and I'd walk down and catch the bus back, and then my dad would meet me down on Highway 23 about 11:30 at night. So it was a full day on Saturday, but the deal was if I had a horse, I had to feed it. So I had a job.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned your grandfather. What was your grandfather's name?
Dewey Tribble.
Okay.
George Dewey Tribble. Some people called him George and some people called him Dewey. But he was really the only grandfather I ever knew. I didn't know my dad's dad. And my grandmother on that side died before I was born. And then my grandmother, who was Janie Tribble, she died when I was 9 years old, so I didn't have blood grandmothers for a long time there. Now, I did have a great-grandmother, Granny Langley, that I knew well, so I had her, but I didn't have as many grandparents as a lot of kids do today.
Okay. And did your grandfather, George Dewey Tribble, did he live in Sugar Hill?
Yes, he lived down on Whitehead Road, and that's the only place I ever knew he lived. I think he did live there on Alton Tucker at one time, but I didn't know. I was too young to know that, but he lived on Whitehead Road, and he lived next door to Mr. Perkle and Mr. Fowler. And then Alton Tucker lived the next house up. He was the very first mayor of Sugar Hill.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, that's where my middle name came from, Mr. Tucker. He was Alton W. He was Alton Wayne, and that's where I got my name from, Mr. Tucker Wayne.
Okay. All right. And what did your grandfather do?
Well, in prior years, he had worked with the state and worked over around Snellville. But the only time I ever knew, he worked at the harness shop in Beaufort. He made saddles for Bone Island, and that's where he retired. So that's the only place I knew he worked. I was told where he worked before, but that's the only place I actually knew he worked. But he worked there a long time.
Okay. All right. And let's see. What kind of hobbies and interests did you have when you were young?
Well, I always enjoyed hunting and fishing, and I guess that was about as much as anything. Hunting and fishing, and of course, riding and taking care of my horse. You know, I was always a horse lover, and still today got three. I don't ride much anymore, but I enjoy having my horses around, so I guess that was a hobby. Now, I don't know that we had many things to do other than to, like I say, hunt and fish and ride horses. We could go all day and ride everywhere. It was about everything except Highway 20 was dirt roads, so wasn't a big deal to get out and ride all day.
Okay. And you kept your horse on Hannah Street, so y'all had a farm?
No. I bought the horse from Mr. Son Mitchell. He had a little pasture there. But after I bought it, I kept it down at my granddaddy's at Whitehead Road. Papa had a barn and a pasture down there and didn't have anything in it. So I fixed the fence. That's where I kept it.
Okay. So you would have to walk from Hannah to Whitehead to get your horse, right?
Excuse me. I would ride a bicycle, Kim.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a bicycle, and most days I would ride. It's a mile from my house to Papa's. I'd ride my bicycle down there and feed my horse if I wasn't riding. And some days, if it's raining, I'd call Papa and say, would you feed my horse? And when he got home from work, he'd feed it. But, yeah, I rode a bicycle most of the time. Everybody had a bicycle, so it wasn't anything to get out and get going on a bicycle. Be gone all day sometimes.
Okay. So, after high school, what did you do after high school? Did you go to college? Did you another job? What?
No, I went right out of high school. I'd been working with Daddy some. Right out of high school, I went to work full-time at Big Apple and worked there for about 6 months. And I was driving back and forth to Atlanta. And Daddy said, you know, if you want to go to work with us, I'll pay you $50 a week. You work 5.5 days. We work till lunch on Saturday. And so I decided I'd go to work with him. And so my first job was at Big Apple out of school. Didn't go to college. We didn't know to go to college much. Daddy had a fourth grade education. And, you know, he'd never pressed anybody to go to college. Daddy kind of had a rough life growing up. He was actually in the CCs, Conservation Corps, when he was about 15. And trying to help feed the family, and they sent him to Oregon to work in the national park stuff, where you see all the stuff out there. He worked out there, so Betty didn't know to push me. Now, Mother, when I got out of school, she kept telling me I need to be a hairstylist. She says, you can make a lot of money someday. And she's probably right when I see what they're charging now. But I had no interest in that. And so anyway, I went to work there, didn't go to college, probably wouldn't have had the opportunity to go to college. I don't know how Mother and Daddy would have afforded it, and so I didn't have the opportunity. So Carolyn went to college 1 year. We got out of school. We graduated in May. I turned 18. She turned 18 in June. And she went to West Georgia for a year. And the next year in August, when we were 19, we got married. So we've been married for 60 years, and she went back later and got her degree and taught school a little while. But after we'd had children, she went back to Bernal and got her degree and taught fifth grade at Sugar Hill for a little while. But it wasn't as... People didn't know to go to college back then as much as they do now, or didn't think about it. It was just, we done good to survive. You know, we came along right after World War II, we were rebuilding this country. And I think that was, you know, they referred to them there as the greatest generation that that fought that war and came home and made something of themselves. And I think that was important at that time, is just to survive and take care of your kids, feed everybody, and treat everybody right. So I think that that was a time that was completely different than anything I've seen in my life. It was just a different time. It's kind of like the roads. You mentioned the roads a while ago. See, there wasn't a Peachtree Industrial. And the roads in Sugar Hill looked altogether different. They weren't connected like they are now. They were all connected different. Alton Tucker Boulevard actually went straight all the way up toward Buford. And Rocky Venable had a store there where 20 came in, and the main street of Sugar Hill came together. And there was no TIB. I mean, so finally they began to work on Peachtree Industrial. And, of course, when the young ladies got killed from coming across the railroad tracks, Mayor and Bice got the road fixed so it's over the bridge, go over the railroad. And that just changed the world. So some people think they know a lot about Sugar Hill, but they really don't. They had to live it. It's kind of like I hear a lot of people talk about the gold mines and this kind of stuff, and I actually remember down where the park is, a young man or a man lived in an old truck body out there where they had been mining gold. And so he lived out there, and there were mineral rights on all the land around. And it's just a different world. But, I mean, we as kids could take off through the woods and you'd come out on another road and you knew everybody and they knew you. And so it wasn't like you had to worry about anything. It was just it's just a good place and a good time to grow up. So.
Okay. Anything else you remember about the gold mines? Did you ever go in any of them? Do you remember seeing any of them?
I remember going in one. I wasn't much under going underground, but we went one night down about where the park was, and a bunch of us boys, some of them had been in them, and we went in one. I wasn't going in. There's always a tale about a panther being around. Finally, I said, okay, I'm going to step inside here. Anyway, we walked in, and one of the boys kicked a rock off. It was like a ledge, and I remember it sounded like it. I don't know, 10 seconds at least, the rock fell and hit water down there. So it was a pretty deep mine. And I never went beyond that, but I knew there was a lot of them around.
Okay. Anything else about the gold mines that you want to share?
Well, I know some people still say they get a little bit of gold out of Level Creek. I've had friends that panned a little down there, got a little bit of gold, not a lot, but a little bit. And there's always a tale about if you go down Whitehead Road, there's a hill there where Mr. Smith lived, Luther Smith now. There's always a tale that there was a huge vein of gold under that hill, but it was so deep that it wasn't profitable to take it out. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that was always a tale about the gold mines. There was always still some gold around.
Okay. Well, that's the first time I've heard that, so that's something
yeah.
new. All
right. Yeah.
So were you in the military, Wayne?
No, I never went in the military. Came close to going into the Army Reserves one time, but didn't. But I came along right after World War II. I wasn't old enough for the Korean conflict. And then by the time Vietnam got wound up, I had 3 children. So I came along right in the middle. Knew a lot of people in the military, but I never did go in.
Okay.
Got classified, but never had to go down because I had 3 children.
Okay. So did you still have your horse after you and Carolyn got married?
Well, after Carolyn and I got married, I bought another horse. Okay. I bought 5 acres down close to where I live now in Swanee, and I built a pasture, and I bought a horse then. And so I had a horse. I had a horse not long after we married, and I have had the horses ever since. So most of the time in my life, I've had a horse.
Okay.
And still enjoy them.
Okay, and that was just pleasure. You didn't ever do anything show or anything like that, right?
No, it was all pleasure. It was all just pleasure, and sometimes, you know, I've raised a bunch of horses, and I've had the opportunity to go out west and ride. I love that. Been out there several times. Been to Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, rode all over out there. So that was a lot of fun, but we'd usually just go somewhere and they'd furnish the horses. There's 4 or 5 of us went several different times to go out and just ride a while.
Now, when you needed supplies for your horse, like harnesses, shoes, where would you go to get your repairs done?
Well, you know, you didn't have a lot of places. Later, John Mobley had his place down at the river. And John would fix about anything you needed fixed. But there were 2 or 3 people around that could do that used to work up at Bona Allen. You know, they'd have a little old shop at home. So if you needed something, you could find somebody that done it. And, you know, I used to have to put shoes on my horse. And there was a blacksmith in Buford. And we would go to Buford and have shoes put on our horse. He'd shape and fix and trim and fix the horses. And then we'd ride right back down Main Street of Buford with our new shoes on our horses. There wasn't enough traffic to matter, so we'd come right back down in front of the harness shop right down the Main Street of Buford with new shoes on our horses. So it was fun to go up there, but there was always somebody around that you could get to fix the leather stuff. Now, my granddaddy, Papa, yeah, he made me a harness and a martingale and a bridle 1 year for Christmas. And that was really special to me that he made it himself. And they let him make it at the shop. And so he made it and gave it to me for Christmas. But stuff like that was important.
Mm-hmm. Do you still have that today?
No, I don't. I'd give anything if I'd kept it, but I don't have it, Kim. I don't know what. I might have let it go when I sold my horse. When I got 16, I sold my horse and bought a car. And so then that was, I guess I was 16 when I did that. Probably by the time I was 23, I had another horse down here where we live.
Okay. What was your car at 16?
I had a 51 Ford, 6-cylinder. Okay. And it wouldn't always crank. I'd have to push it on or park it on a hill so I could go somewhere. I actually lived, you know, where the emissions place is. The road used to go straight through there, and that was a big hill, so I could park it out there and just let it roll down the hill and crank it some.
Okay. And you, that was probably pretty special. Probably not everybody had a car.
No, they didn't. When we went to North Gwinnett school, I guess, and gosh, I guess I was 16. There were like 5 cars that parked at North Gwinnett. Other than teachers, and I was lucky enough to have one of them. But I'd been working and saving a little money, and then when I sold my horse, I had a little money. So I was very lucky to be able to get a horse. I mean, a car. So.
Okay. All right. And so what do you remember about the creation of Buford Dam and Lake Lanier?
Well, I just remember it beginning. You know, we had RAs at the church, Royal Ambassadors, And there was a man came from Texas to work on the dam, and he wound up being our RA leader there at Sugar Hill Church. And I remember him carrying us over to the dam. We do what we call field trips on Wednesday nights. He'd carry us over there, and we could see him working down in the bottom with the cars, little bitty things down when we were up on top of the hill. And then I had a man come from Augusta that actually married my aunt, Nellie Ruth, and Willard. He was he tied steel at the dam. He was a steel worker. And so he tied steel. I remember Mr. Callahan actually died. He was a steel tire. He actually fell when they were building it and died. I'm sure there was somebody else, but that was the one that was very close lived. He actually lived on Whitehead Road. So stuff like that I remember. I remember going down and getting Catawba worms. We'd go get those, and we'd get them close to an old mill. And the old mill, actually, I guess it's still under Lake Lanier because the water began to fill up. And I remember it getting closer and closer, and it got where we couldn't go back in there anymore. So then once they got the dam full, I remember a fishing lot. So we did a lot of fishing over there. With my uncle. Matter of fact, with your daddy.
Okay. Do you, anything else that you remember as the lake filled up, but like a major big thing that got covered as the water filled up?
The main thing I remember is they said it'd take a long time to fill it up. We actually had a lot of rain one year, and it backed up so quick, it went over the road up in Flowery Branch. You couldn't go up Highway 23 and go to Gainesville. You had to go around it. I remember going up there as a kid, and a bunch of us boys went up there so we could see it. But about where little old lake, Wayne's Lake, it was a place up there, and you couldn't drive across Highway 23, so it backed up quick there. Other than that, I don't remember any particular thing. I remember houses and trees being in it, but nothing other than that.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's go back to your work. When did you become partners with your dad in Hill & Son Cabinet?
I became partners the year I turned 19. I worked with him for a while at 18, and then I bought Mr. McDaniel's part. I became partner before Carolyn and I married. And but we were there. Carolyn and I married. Me and Daddy worked together until 1972. And he decided to retire and move to the mountains. And so then I took over a Hill Cabinet. I changed it and incorporated it. And it became Hill Cabinet Company, and we ran it. I actually was in the cabinet business for 32 years before I ran for office.
Okay. All right. Tell me about running for office. How did that become about?
Well, I always wanted to run, and in the probably in the 70s, I wanted to run, and Carolyn says, we got three small kids. I'm not raising them by myself. So anyway, I backed off, and later I decided to run. So I ran for a district seat and lost. Actually ran on the Democratic ticket. When we grew up here, everybody was a Democrat. So anyway, I ran on the Democratic ticket and lost by 1,800 votes. Mr. Tucker, who was the first mayor of Sugar Hill, called me one day and he said, "Don't you come have lunch with me?" So I did. He was probate judge by then. Matter of fact, over in Lawrenceville, he was probate judge a long, long time. He was well known and everybody knew him. But anyway, So I had lunch with him, and he says, you need to change parties. We're turned Republican. You need to change parties, and you need to run for chairman. And I said, Mr. Tucker, you've lost your mind. He said, no, I'm serious as I can be. He says, Wayne, you're not going to be any different where you're on a Democratic or Republican ticket. I'm a big Democrat, but I want you to run as a Republican and get elected and help this county. So me and Carolyn talked about it, and we decided that we would give it a run. So that's how I got started to run for chairman. And we had a lot of support from a lot of different people. And then our kids were all grown, and so Carolyn was all in. I tell people she probably got as many votes as I did. She had been in so many different things in the county with the Cancer Society and different things like that. So we got it started, and I was lucky enough to get elected and served 12 years. And right now, I'm the longest-serving chairman that's been over there in modern times. Anyway, I don't know about 1800s, but since then, I served longer than any other chairman, and we had a good time. When I went in, Carolyn wasn't much on politics. She was always involved in nonprofits, and so we decided she'd concentrate on the helping people on the nonprofit side, and I'd be the one that was in politics. So that's kind of the way we ran it. It worked good for 12 years, and we accomplished a lot. I know she was heavily involved in the Cancer Society, and I think it's still a record. We used to have a Cancer Society ball, and while I was in office, and she actually, the year she chaired it, she raised more money than anybody ever had with it. So she's a good gal and worked hard. She actually helped her and Geraldine Cates actually started the North Gwinnett Co-op, and that thing has grown into something that's been great and helping a lot of people. So she's always been in the nonprofit side, and so politics was good for us in a couple of different ways. It gave her an opportunity and gave me an opportunity. So I was good. I had the opportunity to travel all over the United States. I wound up as not only head of Gwinnett County, but I was president of the Association of County Commissioners of Georgia. I sat on the board of the National Association of Counties. I wound up as ARC chairman, and I wound up as chairman of the National Association of Regional Councils, which was about 230 regional councils all around the country. Got to travel a good bit whenever I was in office, and as a matter of fact, I have actually been in every state in the United States, so it gave me a lot of opportunity. I had a good time, and I think we accomplished a lot the years we were in Gwinnett County. A lot of things wouldn't have got done if we hadn't have done them, so a lot of good things. It was a good experience for me.
Okay. What year did you go in office?
I took office January 1, 93. And it came out at the end of 2004. Well, it's been almost 28 years now that that I went into office. I was 50 years old, I guess. Yeah. Maybe it's been 29. I'm 79. I went in at 50. Okay. Served 12 years. Came out at 62. So,
okay. All right. During your time in office, what would you say is some of your biggest accomplishments?
Well, you know, I have the F. Wayne Hill wastewater plant named after me, and a lot of people think I'm going to say that. And it was a huge accomplishment. I play it, don't downplay it at all. But it sits at the intersection of 985 and 85, which is a big, big plant. Carries water back to Lake Lanier now, about 40 million gallons a day. So we're proud of everything that's been done there. But probably the two things that I think I'm as much proud of or more proud of is I had the opportunity to help get the Gwinnett College started, Georgia Gwinnett College. And also the Environmental Center. I had the opportunity to travel all over the United States and and get people to look and design that environmental center. Those two things will educate people, young people, and educate people in college for a long, long, long time. So I'm very proud of that. Now, there's other accomplishments I'm proud of, but if I had to pick two, that's probably it, simply because they will be going on long after I'm dead, probably you're dead, and it ought to go on forever. And at one time, before COVID hit, there were 100,000 kids a year going through the environmental center learning about our environment, and that pleases me a tremendous amount. So those two things, I guess, would be at the top of my list.
Okay. Any famous people that you met during your time in politics that you want to share?
Well, I met presidents. I met heads of all the departments just about in Washington. I would go to Washington, and, you know, especially when I was involved with the Nice Association of Counties, and sat with different people, but met both Bush presidents. I got to meet both of them. And spend some time with them, and actually went down. I kept fussing when George W. would come to Georgia. He didn't seem to come to Gwinnett much. I kept fussing about it. I got a call one day and said, "Do you want to come down and welcome the president to Atlanta?" And I said, "Sure." I figured there'd be 300 people there, and they told me where to come to. Well, they were either seven or eight of us there, mayor of Atlanta, me and some of the folks, and Griffin Bell. Anyway, I got to stand on the tarmac, watch Air Force One land, and stand at the bottom of the steps and greet the president. So I won't ever forget. I told him, I said, "I'm just a lowly commissioner from Gwinnett County." He says, "Wayne, don't you ever apologize. I started on the planning board in Texas, so." That was pretty special to meet the president like that. But, you know, I got to meet all kind of people. When we opened the arena, I'm a country music fan. George Strait was there. I got to go down and spend some time with George Strait. So a lot of people like that I had the opportunity to meet that I never would have if I hadn't been in office. So it was a good time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else about your time in office that you want to share?
Well, I think the big thing to me was preserving as much land as we could. I knew things were developing, and so it was fun for me. I could to get to buy and preserve a lot of land in Gwinnett. When I went in, there's about 1,700 acres of parks and green space, and when I left, there's probably over 8,000 acres parks and green space, and that was pretty important to me. So I'm very, very pleased with that. You know, a lot of people know and some of them don't, but I was honored with a statue over at the Environmental Center. And so I got a statue of me and three kids over there looking at a turtle. And there's a plaque there that tells a little bit about my time as far as what I did or what was able. And I say I couldn't have done anything if I hadn't had a good board and good people working for me. So I had great people around me. It's always been said, if you call a meeting and you're the smartest person in the room, you probably got a problem. So I always had a lot of smart people that I worked with, and I got credit for a lot of things they did, but I got blamed whenever they screwed up. So it worked out good. I still have a lot of friends that I met and their time in office, and it was just a good time for everybody. But it wasn't any one person. It was a whole group of people.
All right. You mentioned a little white lightning. What do you know about moonshining in Sugar Hill?
I don't know much about it other than I knew where some stills were.
Okay.
When we'd ride our horses, you know, we'd always run up on a still somewhere. And so there was always stills around, but I had a person that worked for me one time. He said, "Wayne, you know, during the Depression, that's the only way we survived. We made liquor and sold liquor." And so it wasn't unusual, I don't think, for people to make moonshine. I never have been around it much. Drank a little of it time to time. Never did like it much. It wasn't very tasty, but after we moved to where we're at now, I'm actually in the city of Swanee now. I wasn't at the time. We moved halfway between my parents and Charlotte's parents. But at one time, I had my German Shepherd bringing in sugar sacks that hadn't been rained on. So there was a spill very close to my house, and I went to a certain person and said, "Don't y'all shoot my dog, I'm going to call the law." And he said, "I don't know what you're talking about, but I never did see another sugar sack."
But your dog
was always around.
Your dog survived, though.
My dog survived. They didn't shoot my dog, but they didn't want no more sugar sacks.
Okay. So was your wife's parents from Sugar Hill, too?
No, they were from Swanee. Carolyn actually grew up in Swanee. Well, her dad was from Swanee. They'd lived in Swanee for a long, long time. And so we're kind of unique. There's not many people that have spent their entire life in Gwinnett, but we have.
Okay. All right. What farms do you remember that was around as you grew up?
What farms?
Yeah, was there any big farms that come to mind?
You know, everybody had a little garden and stuff, but I don't remember big farms. The only big thing I remember was the Boney Allen farm. Now, Mr. Allen had a bunch of land over there and horses and cows. I remember that, but, you know, that was in Buford. I don't remember anything big in Sugar Hill. I remember Papa telling me one time he could have bought mostly everything in Sugar Hill for $500. I said, "Well, why didn't you buy it?" He said, "I didn't have $500. So he could have bought a lot of land around, but, you know, you didn't have money. People didn't have money right out of World War II.
Right. Okay. The churches. Tell me what you know about the churches in Sugar Hill.
Well, you know, we had the Methodist Church and we had the Baptist Church. That's what I remember. I've been a member of Sugar Hill Baptist, which it ain't called Sugar Hill Baptist anymore, but I've been a member there. I'm told that during World War II, Mama used to carry me in the old church that nobody much remembers. And they'd carry a quilt and lay me on the floor. She'd sit on the front pew and lay me on the floor during that church during World War II. So I remember the first time I remember a brick church was I remember when they buried my grandmother. And that's when I really, I guess, remember the church there in Sugar Hill, which is where the apartments are today. So, and you know, where the brewery is over there today, that was our ship building.
Okay. And the church where she would put you on the quilt and lay you in the floor, where was it located?
It was just out in the parking lot of the old church, I'm told. Some people say it's in the corner of the cemetery. I don't know the answer to that, but it was right in that area. I've been told there's a marker somewhere there that says it's the old church, but I don't know that.
Okay. All right. And anything else about the churches that you want to add?
No, I don't reckon. You know, both of them was right there on the house of Tucker. And, of course, you had Riverside Church down there. I always heard that Sugar Hill Church came out of Riverside when they had a split down there. Some of them come to Sugar Hill and started church there. So I just know what I've been told with that. Don't know much about it.
Okay. And you have family that is buried in the Sugar Hill Cemetery.
Oh, yeah. my granddaddy and my mother and daddy. And I have a grave lot there. That's where I'll be buried. So we're all right in there together.
Okay. Any other relatives in the cemetery?
Not that I know. Well, I got a little sister. I have a little sister that born lived 3 or 4 hours. She's buried there. And then my grandmother and granddaddy. Aunt and uncle. And mother and daddy. So that's about what I know. That's we didn't have a big family. If we did, we didn't know it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's see. What do you miss most about the early times in Sugar Hill?
I guess just the way people treated people, I guess, is what I miss the most. You know, I don't miss when we moved in the house there at where the admissions place is. We had an outhouse. I don't miss that. And so that kind of stuff, I don't miss. The closeness of the community, I think, would be the only thing that I would miss. I'm very proud of what all's been done. And like I say, we grew up poor. People are not that way anymore. So I think that's been good for all of us.
Okay. If you could tell people one thing about Sugar Hill's past that they might not know that we haven't already talked about, what would that be?
What would that be? Gosh, I don't know, Kim. One thing that about the past that they don't know. I don't know that I've got anything that people wouldn't know. I mean, a lot of the people that moved here don't know a lot about a lot of it. Just, I guess, it's a different world than it ever is today. It's just completely different. Nobody would believe where we come from, I guess.
Okay.
It was just it's just a different world, and it's been a good ride.
Okay. And what do you think Sugar Hill's gonna look like 50 years from now?
I don't have a clue. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that one.
Okay.
I think a lot of the things that are getting built, they'll be in a rebuilding stage. You know, everything gets old. Well, I think some of the stuff will deteriorate. You know, some of the materials we use today are not going to last 200 or 300 years, and I think we will be redoing a lot of stuff. But I don't think it's unique to Sugar Hill. I think it's like the county. You know, when we were growing up, all the development was in the lower end of the county, in the Norcross area. And it's moved forward. And now we have a lot of it in the north end of the county. And you see a lot of redevelopment in the south end of the county. And I think that's the same thing that will happen with our cities over time. I think it will probably continue to grow. I've made the statement when I was in office that probably at some point in time the whole county will be in cities and more annexations take place. You know, Fulton County is almost that way now. There's almost no unincorporated land in Fulton County, and I think that may happen in Gwinnett County over the next 50 years. It'll all be in cities. I don't know what all the county will do then. You know, in Fulton County, basically the commissioners I think they have the sewer in most places and the water, and then they have to out.
Okay. And what words of wisdom would you pass on to the current and future generations of Sugar Hill?
Well, the main thing is you got to do what's right. You know, don't do what's right for yourself. Look at the big picture and think 50 years out. That was one of the things we tried to do when I was in office. We had plans 50 years out, and I think that's what's got to be done with the folks in Sugar Hill. Think long term. Don't think about just right now. Think long term and what's going to be best for everybody. That would be the best advice I could give them.
Okay. And is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you would like to share?
No, I don't know of anything. Just it was a great, great place for me to grow up. And I still have a lot of good memories, and I always want Sugar Hill to do good.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your time today, and thank you for taking the time to do this audio interview. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording now, but we really do appreciate it.
All right. It's been good.